Good morning. Good morning. All right, we're awake. Good to see you this morning. Today, we turn a page in our year as we move from Thanksgiving and now we look toward Christmas. And I realize that for some of you, that has already happened. For some of you, you've had your Christmas decorations up since Halloween. Am I right? How many of you go Halloween, Christmas, Thanksgiving, Christmas? Anybody there? Some of you even skip over Thanksgiving altogether. But for a lot of us, we have been in a season of Thanksgiving. If you were here on Wednesday night, our prayer is that you were blessed by the devotional that we had in which we focused on Thanksgiving. We had three men from three different generations that helped us to reflect on three different psalms, each of those psalms giving us a reason to be thankful. So I want to thank David, Josh, and Josh for being a part of that for us and helping us to think about the reasons we have to be thankful. And then last week, Bill spoke to us about the ultimate Thanksgiving, the reason that we have, when all else fails, to continue to be thankful, and that is, of course, that we serve a loving God, the things that God has done for us outweighing any bad that might happen to us while we are here. And so now we move into a period where we have been in Thanksgiving and now we look toward Christmas. And there's a question that is usually on our minds during this period of time, and it's this: what do you want for Christmas? Right? What's on your Christmas wish list? It's kind of hard to say. How many of you have asked that this week? What do you want for Christmas? We like to ask that because it helps us as parents or loved ones that we're getting gifts for to go fishing for ideas. What is it that others want? But more, we like to be asked the question, what do you want for Christmas, right? We like to think about the things that we want and request in the hopes that we might get those. When I was a kid, we used to get catalogs in the mail, and I would go through with a big, heavy marker, and I would circle heavily all the items, all the different things that I wanted in hopes that my parents would look at it and decide to get me any one of those things. We like to get stuff, right? Well, let me suggest that you ask a different question this week. Instead of asking people, what do you want for Christmas, ask them this: what are you most excited to give? Has anybody ever asked you that? Has anybody ever asked you, what are you most excited to give this Christmas? And the reason I've never been asked that question, I've never asked that question myself, is because we are more trained to think about what it is that I want, what it is that I want to get, not so much what I hope to give. You know, Paul quotes Jesus as having said in Acts chapter 20, verse 35, it is better to give than to receive. Now, when we hear that, our first knee-jerk reaction might be, nope, I don't think so. I think you got that one wrong, right? Because we like getting stuff. But of course, Jesus is on to something, isn't he? When he says it is better to give than to receive, he's talking about something pretty important for us to think about. I want you to, for a second, compare the feeling you get when you get a gift. You don't be happy. You might be excited to use whatever it is that you were given. But then after a while, doesn't that joy and happiness sort of wear off? You know, when the clothes you got don't fit anymore, they wear out. When the toy that you got breaks. When the new shiny thing that you got is outdated and replaced in just a couple of months by something you want even more. Compare that with the feeling you get when you know you have just absolutely killed the gift you got for somebody else. I'm a terrible giver because I get really excited about it and I want to tell the person what I got them. If I get a gift more than 2 days before Christmas, I will start dropping hints. I will start like, hey, do you want to know what I got you? I bet you want to know what I got you. Because I'm just so excited for them to receive what it is that I got. I think the difference is that it is a more lasting joy because we are creating connections with other people, right? We are doing something that says, you are more important than me. I have been thinking about you and your needs, and I have decided to give up of my money to give this to you. Of course, Jesus is on to something when he says, it is better to give than to receive. About 3 or 4 years ago, there was a group that went to the Boys and Girls Club, and they took the wish lists of these children. If you don't know much about this group, it's a group of children who come from single-parent homes, or maybe their families don't have a lot of money, and they bought them the most expensive item on their wish list. And they brought them into a room, and they said, "Here's the deal, kids. You can either have this gift," and they got real excited about it, "or," and then they brought out another gift. And they said, "Or you can choose to give this gift to your mom or to your dad." And they found that over 80% of the kids they talked to chose to give the gift to their parent. Some of them, it was tough sledding. Some of them, their faces fell and they were, "Oh, I don't know, you know, what I want to do." And then ultimately they would decide to give to their parents. For some, it was immediate. "Oh, I want to give this to my mom." And I remember they asked one little boy, "Why, that wasn't a very hard decision for you." And he said, "Are you kidding? This is just a toy, but this is my mom." And then they would bring the parents in and tell them what had happened. The parents would cry, and the kids would cry, and I would cry, and everybody's crying. And it's such a heartwarming thing, and they were just so excited and so impressed, and the kids were so proud to be able to do this. It truly is better to give than to receive. And I think the reason for that is because even when it is a small thing like giving a gift, we are taking one step closer to aligning ourselves with the nature of God, the greatest giver. For God so loved the world that He gave. He gave that which was most precious to Him for your sake and for mine. And so when we do something so small as to give a gift, or something even larger like giving of our time or our service, or maybe we give up our own wants and desires and wishes for the sake of someone else, we are profoundly aligning ourselves with the character and the nature of God, who in His love is the greatest giver. This morning, I want us to think about what it means to be a follower and what it means to be givers and what it is that we are to be giving. And I want to do this by looking at Mark chapter 12, verses 41 through 44. This is the last scene of Jesus' public ministry recorded in Mark's gospel. Now, a lot of times, we will look at this image, we will think about this widow's offering, and we use it to talk about contribution. Now, let me set your minds at ease. This is not a contribution sermon. Because I think Jesus is using this scene and this story to make a much larger point, one that He has been trying to make since the very beginning of Mark, and it has to do with the nature of being a disciple, the nature of being a follower of Jesus. And He uses this last scene to drive His point home. And so I want you to read with me, starting in Mark chapter 12 and verse 41. "And Jesus sat down opposite the treasury, and He watched. He watched people putting money in the offering box, and many rich people came and put in large sums. But then a poor widow came and put in 2 small copper coins, making about a penny. And Jesus saw this, and He called His disciples to Him, and He said to them, 'Truly, I say to you, this poor widow has put more than all of those who are contributing to the offering box. For they contribute out of their abundance, but she, out of her poverty, has given everything she had. In fact, all that she had to live on.'" What an incredible little scene. The last scene before, in chapter 13, He makes some predictions, and then chapter 14 begins His journey to the cross. And as the last scene in His public ministry, it holds special significance. I want us to notice a few things as we think along with Jesus about this scene and about what's going on here, and try to ask ourselves, what point is He trying to drive home? First, I want you to notice that Jesus is making an unusual contrast between this poor widow and her offering and the religious leaders of the day. Just before this takes place, in verse 38, something else is going on. And Mark places this story right after the scene before it. "And in Jesus' teachings, He said, 'Beware of the scribes. They like to walk around in long robes, and they like greetings in the marketplaces, and they have the best seats in the synagogues and places of honor at the feasts. And they devour the widows' houses, and for a pretense make long prayers. Theirs is the greater condemnation. So he's describing a group of people who, as religious leaders, are not living up to the standard. A group of leaders who like the appearance of being holy and righteous. They wear the long robes, and they like the best seats, and they do all the greeting, and they, in other words, are drawing attention to themselves so that they will look the part. But on the side, they are devouring the widows' homes. Widows in the ancient world were among the most vulnerable and pitiable. It was a despicable thing that these religious leaders who have all the appearances of doing the right things are taking advantage of the most vulnerable. And so he, on one hand, offers this negative example of these religious leaders exploiting widows. And then in our scene that we're looking at, he offers this widow, the most vulnerable, the most pitiable, as being the one for us to emulate. He offers her example, far from the typical depiction of widows as being the most pitiable. He says her actions are someone, her are actions that we should try to follow in our own lives. The readers of Mark would have been pretty astounded to hear this, to have this widow being held up as the example. And next, I want you to notice the timing and where Jesus is when he is talking in this scene. Jesus says, it says that he sits down opposite the treasury. The treasury referred to 13 different trumpet-shaped chests that were scattered around the outer temple courts that everyone had access to. And these temples were used specifically to receive donations for the upkeep of the temple, okay, for the continuation of the temple services. So all of the money that were going into these chests were going for the temple in order for it to continue running, for its upkeep, for it to keep offering the services that it did. And here Jesus sits down, and he is watching as people are coming and going, placing money in the offering for the upkeep of the temple. And he doesn't make any negative comments about the rich, but he watches and he watches until he notices one occurrence that causes him to draw his disciples' attention to the widow's offering. And he doesn't hesitate to praise her offering, even though he tells us that it's only two small copper coins, which make about a penny. You think about that. Two coins that make a penny. And Jesus praises this offering. Okay, we all know this. What gives this story more significance is understanding what happens next. When we only think about this story outside of its fuller context, we miss a larger point. Because right after this, Jesus gets up and he walks out, and then he predicts the destruction of the temple. Immediately following the story, he goes out and he tells his disciples that the temple's time is coming to an end. In the mind of Mark, Jesus already knows the temple's days are numbered, therefore rendering any monetary donations to the temple practically meaningless. The temple is being destroyed. Why give your money to an institution that's coming to an end? So what are we to make of this? Surely it would be better for them to have given their money to a different cause, right? Maybe if we look at Psalm 4, 6 and 7, we might think along with Jesus about the significance of what this widow is doing. The psalmist says, "There are many who will say, 'Who will show us some good? Lift up the light of your face upon us, O Lord.'" And then the psalmist continues, "You have put more joy in my heart than they have when their grain and their wine abound." In other words, the psalmist is pointing out that God has more to offer to bring our hearts joy than simple material blessings. And so maybe as Jesus is watching this widow, he is thinking less about the fruitlessness of her offering and more about the surrender of one's life out of both abundance and poverty. He doesn't view her offering as an expression of her poverty or her neediness. She only has this much to give, but instead, he sees her offering as being one of gratitude and complete surrender and trust to God. And then I want you to notice the specific wording in verse 43. Mark says that Jesus, upon seeing what the widow has done, called his disciples to him and say. And so this point brings us to, I think, what is the heart of this story and why Mark includes it and why this is the last scene that we have before Jesus goes on about his business. Mark's gospel has been primarily about two things: understanding the nature of who Jesus is and his ministry, and what it means to be a disciple. And this story of the widow is Jesus' final lesson on what it means to be a follower of his. He has one final example. And so there's a reason why he doesn't mind her gift going to the temple when it's not really going to mean much. It's why he sets her over and against the religious leaders of the time. When Mark uses this phrase and he calls his disciples to him to say, it's always followed by something that Jesus wants his disciples to understand about what it means to be his follower. Over and over throughout Mark, Jesus will call them and he will make some sort of pronouncement about what it means to be the Christ, about what it means to follow him. And in this case, this is what he wants them to understand. Out of her poverty, she has put in everything she had, everything that she had to live on. This widow epitomizes what Jesus has been saying all along about being his disciple. At the very beginning of Mark in chapter 1, starting in verse 16, we have some of the first disciples being called to follow Jesus. And if you remember, in these stories, these guys are out fishing. And it isn't the weekend warrior kind of fishing that we are used to. This is the kind of fishing that if they don't fish today, they don't eat today. 90% of the world's population at this time were subsistence level living, meaning if they didn't work that day, they couldn't provide for their family that day. If they didn't work that day, they couldn't take care of their family that day. And so when these disciples are out fishing, they are out making their living, and yet when Jesus calls to them and calls that they come to follow him, they do so without hesitation, putting their full trust, their full hope in God. And in the middle, in chapter 8, verse 34, Jesus says, if any would become my followers, they must deny themselves, take up their cross, and follow me. Now, we kind of understand what that means, but think about when he would have said this. They would have had no idea what he meant by cross. They wouldn't have understood the implications about Jesus and his sacrifice. They would have just seen the cross as a symbol of something difficult, something no one would actually choose for themselves. And yet he says, in order to follow after me, you must be willing to deny yourself. Deny your own wants, deny your own desires and your own comfort and your own wishes for the sake of me. Choose the difficult path. Choose the difficult thing going forward. And then in this final scene in which the widow stands in sharp contrast to not only the great man of wealth in chapter 10, verse 22, who had way too much to give up and so he went away sad, but she also stands in contrast to these religious leaders who, although trying to maintain the right appearance, are actually taking advantage of people. I think Jesus uses the widow as a reminder of what he said all along about being his follower. You must be willing to place your ultimate trust in God by giving him every part of your life, which more often than not involves us giving that which we cling to the most. Whether it's our money, whether it's our priorities, whether it's our rights, or indeed our very lives. And then finally, it's worth noting this story anticipates two other accounts in Mark's gospel. The first is the unnamed woman in chapter 14 who comes into the room where Jesus is with an astronomically valuable jar of ointment. And she pours it over Jesus' head, and those around her criticize the waste, much like they could have criticized the widow if they knew the temple was coming to an end. And what did she have to give anyway? But in that story, Jesus says simply, hey, she did what she could. She did what she could. Both the widow and this woman are reckless in giving everything they have to God. And then finally, her story anticipates the path of Jesus himself. Jesus, who in the coming days will give his life for the sake of others. In anticipation of this act of self-sacrifice, he teaches his disciples not to limit their commitment by simply keeping the minimum that the law demands, but instead giving their whole being to God. Our giving, from the smallest form of it to the greatest, is a way of partnering in the mindset, the character, and the attitude of Christ. My hope for us is that we find ways, actively find intentional and purposeful ways to give, whether it's of our time, our resources, our priorities, whatever it may be. I read a story, an account of something a church group did a couple of years ago. They had gone through a series called Blessed to be a Blessing. And what they did was they took up a donation to have enough money to give everyone in the congregation an envelope, from the youngest kid to the oldest kid, oldest member. They gave them an envelope, and in the envelope was either a $5 bill, a $10 bill, or a $20 bill. And these were their instructions. They said, "We want you to take this and to go out into the community and find a way to be a blessing to someone else. And then at the end of the month, we're going to collect your stories to share with the congregation." And the kind of stories they came back with were pretty incredible. Some of the ones that I just remember is one person said, "My wife and I, we only had $5 in our envelope, so we decided that we would pool our money and buy supplies to bake homemade blueberry muffins that we would then take to our office and share with a lady there whose family was dealing with an illness, just to let her know that we were caring for her." Many other people had other stories, from the youngest to the oldest, of creative ways they were finding to go out and be a blessing to somebody else. In fact, it caused quite the stir in the community, to the point that the town newspaper wrote an article about the stir that was being caused by this large group of people going out and spending a month doing nothing but figuring out ways they could be a blessing to somebody else, asking for nothing in return other than the joy of being able to do for someone else. I want to encourage you this week, just as we encouraged our young ones, to find a way to give. Find a way to show love to other people. Find a way to be a blessing to somebody else this week. Find a way to partner with God in the attitude and the mindset of Jesus. Find a way, like this widow, to do what you can. And so my prayer for all of us is that we allow the focus of our attention to naturally shift from giving thanks to the gifts we've been given to becoming the ultimate givers ourselves. This morning, we are going to transition into a time of thinking and remembering the Lord's sacrifice. As we come before the table, I want you to be thinking about ways that you can honor that sacrifice by giving yourself. Whether it's giving yourself completely and wholly to God, whether it's taking small steps every day to being an intentional giver yourself. As we move into this time and thinking about and celebrating the Lord's Supper, remember the things that you have to be thankful for, but don't leave it there. Think about ways that you can show your thankfulness by becoming a giver. If there at this time is any need that you might have, the prayers of the church, or you want to receive the ultimate blessing of giving your life to Christ and putting him on baptism, whatever your need may be, you can come right now or at any time, really. And then after this song, we will transition into our Lord's Supper. Please come while we stand and sing.